Like Paxton? What happened between his branch of the family and yours? He hissed out a disgusted breath. Too many run-ins to count. He explained that it began 3 generations ago. Control of Hell's Mouth had fallen out of Ballinger hands several times in their history, but never for long. Most recently was when Paxton's great-grandfather had sold it off for a handful of coins in a drunken card game with a farmer from Parsis staying at the inn. It turned out the farmer was the king of Islandia. Hell's Mouth was isolated and small, and the king had no interest in it other than collecting a tax. The kingdom's borders were redrawn, reaching high to include Hell's Mouth, which explained the odd tear-shaped kingdom. All offers to buy it back were rejected, but it was still left to the Ballingers to maintain order. After that, Jace's great-grandfather took control at Tor's Watch and banished his older brother who had gambled away the town. The brother went south, sobered up, and he and now his spawn had schemed to get back control of Tor's Watch ever since. So Gunnar or Titus could oust you?
If I did something stupid enough. Or Priya or Jelaine. Even Nash or Lydia, for that matter. And that's the way it should be. It's not about a single patre, but the family and those we owe loyalty to. When you swear protection, you don't go gambling it away for another round of drinks.
You Ballingers hold grudges for a long time. You never forgive?
Just as the gods gave us mercy, we do too. Once. Turn us into a fool a second time, and you pay.
By pay, I didn't think he meant a fine. What about the arena that you've mentioned? Is that part of Islandia too?
No,
he answered emphatically. He said the arena was nestled below Tor's Watch on its western side. It began centuries ago in the ruins of a huge complex where the ancients had once held sporting matches. The family had repaired and expanded it over the years, and even more so since the new treaties were established and trade had increased. What used to be a place just for farmers was now a principal trading site for merchandise of every kind, and also for negotiations and future deals to be made. Luxurious rooms were provided to ambassadors, well-to-do farmers, anyone who could pay the price. 4 of the lesser kingdoms had permanent apartments there, and more were showing interest.
What about those two?
I asked, nodding toward Truco and Rybart, who were almost upon us.
No apartments, but they have space on the arena floor like other merchants.
The 2 league leaders eyed us briefly as they passed. While others we had encountered had offered condolences to the Patre, these league leaders only returned a stiff but respectful nod to Jace and continued on their way. We turned another corner, which brought us to the wide plaza in the center of town. For all of Jace's nods, smiles, and slow, easy strides, the tension gripping the town was most noticeable here. Wagons were stopped without warning and inspected, tarps thrown aside. Perhaps citizens thought something had been stolen because news of the labor hunters seemed to have been effectively quashed. As far as I knew, none of the wagons had revealed anything suspicious, but I saw Jace's eyes turn sharp every time one lumbered past, as if he was memorizing every unfamiliar face. Besides the Straza walking both before and behind us, guards stood watch on the elevated skywalks that connected the Tembris. More guards stood on corners. There was nothing to distinguish them from anyone else in town, but I saw the knowing glances between them and Jace as we passed. They were waiting for a war to erupt, or maybe this was their way of making sure that it didn't. We were just nearing the temple when Jace grumbled under his breath. Paxton was approaching us. Several large men who were well-armed walked behind him. Today, Jace was armed too, a dagger on one side,
his sword on the other. I hadn't seen him use either weapon yet, just his fist in the hunter's throat, which had proved deadly. I wondered about his skill with these other weapons. I only had the small knife in my boot, but as Natia taught me, a small, well-thrust knife was as lethal to a heart as a large one, and much easier to conceal. The air changed to something more deadly as the two cousins locked gazes. I surveyed the men behind Paxton, already choosing which to take down first if circumstances took a turn for the worse.
"Good to see you out and about, cousin," Paxton called. "You still in town?"
Jace replied, as if he had spotted something smelly on the bottom of his boot he couldn't quite scrape free. Paxton stopped in front of us, and though today his dress was more casual, he was still impeccably groomed, his white shirt and tan trousers wrinkle-free, his face gleaming with a close shave.
"I have a caravan on its way to the arena," he said. "I thought I might as well stay and settle a few things myself." "So your hawker can't be trusted?" "I've hired a new one. I'm breaking him in. And the times have changed." "Not as much as you might think, cousin."
Paxton turned his attention to me.
"A pleasure to see you again. Forgive me, I'm afraid I didn't catch your name yesterday."
With rumors flying through town, I was sure he knew, but I played his game anyway, hoping he would move along quickly. I had just spotted something that interested me far more than Jace's boorish cousin, something I had been looking for all morning. Ren and Sinove. They waited in the shadows of the Tembris on the other side of the plaza, their rattan garments exchanged for clothes with local flavor. Large hats shadowed their faces. "Kazzie of Brightmist," I answered. Paxton reached out to take my hand in greeting, and Jace and Nastraza all moved imperceptibly, their hands just a bit closer to their weapons, making me wonder again about the bad blood between the Ballingers and Paxton's branch of the family. This wasn't just an old grudge. What were those run-ins Jace had mentioned? It was perplexing that they were still compelled to do business together, but I supposed much could be tolerated in the name of profit. Paxton squeezed my fingers and kissed the back of my hand, which I found to be an overly familiar custom. I pulled my hand away.
"Welcome to the family," he said and looked back at Jace. "She's quite lovely. I'm sorry I missed the wedding.
There's been no wedding," I corrected.
"What? Still no wedding? I got the impression yesterday that..."
He dismissed his thought with a wave of his hand, then asked,
"What are you two waiting for? The temple is right here."
His theatrics were maddening, and I wished he would just get on with his point, but I wasn't sure he had one. Maybe simply annoying Jace was his goal.
"Oh, it's the queen, isn't it? Waiting for her imminent arrival."
"Yes," I answered. "The queen is my sovereign. I am a soldier in her army, and I require her blessing." Paxton grinned, his eyes leisurely roaming over me.
"For your sake, Jace, I hope the queen comes soon. Or someone just might come steal away your prize."
The way he said it, I knew he considered a Vendan soldier anything but a prize. But it pushed Jace's patience to its limit.
"Move along," Jace ordered. "We're done here."
The mood changed in an instant, and Paxton's flippant attitude vanished. This was not an order from one cousin to another, but from Patre to underling, and it cut through the air with as much menace as a sword. There was no question that one more word from Paxton and Jace would do something unpleasant. Paxton stiffened, his Ballinger pride evident. But he wasn't stupid. He silently left without a goodbye, his crew following close behind him.
Jace's eyes remained fixed on them as they walked away, a vein at his temple raised and hot.
Is there nothing you won't steal, Jace Ballinger?
He looked at me, confused. Move along? I said, trying to prick his memory.
My phrase to you?
At least you didn't threaten to cut his pretty neck. Or maybe you only said it because you were swept away with a nostalgic moment? A gleam lit his eyes, warmth replacing the rage that had been there seconds ago.
I guess your words suit me. Will borrowing them cost me something else?
His gaze settled into me, touching me in intimate ways. I needed to throw the wall back up between us, but instead my blood raced warmer. I pulled in a shaky breath.
Not this time, I answered. Consider it a gift.
His lips had barely parted, a reply imminent, when his attention was turned away by Priya and Mason, heckling his name as they laughed and strolled toward us, talking about the hour being well past noon, the hot sun, a cool tavern, a cold ale, roast venison, and I didn't hear what else. Timing was everything, and theirs was perfect. The noise rose, the shadows swirled, sun-dappled shade swayed with the breeze, and the arms of the city reached out to spirit me away. And even the eyes that had been quietly watching us from afar were bewildered when I disappeared. Ren meant to be angry. I saw it in her eyes. But once we were far from everyone else, in a quiet little alley, she blew out a fierce, relieved breath and hugged me. Hugs were rare from Ren. In fact, the only time I could remember one before was when she clutched me after her family died.
By the gods, where have you been?
She demanded, her face flushed with heat. You didn't lose faith in me, did you? Sinove's eyes narrowed in the shadows of her hat, their blue ice sparking, a wicked smile curling her mouth.
Who cares where she's been? What has she been doing? Tell us everything.
I told them about the labor hunters and our escape, and about the chain that kept us together. I skipped the parts of our journey that I knew Sinove was hoping for. But the best part is I'm inside Tor's watch now and have a reason to stay for a while. I explained further about the letter to the queen and the conditions I had laid down. My little business agreement with the Patre will not only give me access and time to search the compound, but will also provide reparations to the settlers in the process. They're going to get everything back that they lost. They stared at me, not looking as pleased as I had expected.
It really couldn't have worked out better, I added. Any sign of Natia yet?
Hold on just a minute, Sinove balked. You think we're going to let you breeze over the main item? Him! You were both out for blood last we saw you, but just now the sparks flying between you two could have singed my hair. What's going on?
I looked to Ren for help. She shrugged.
Might as well tell us. You know she won't stop.
I confessed that there had been a moment or two between us when we were out in the wilderness, but now it was over. Sinove snorted.
As over as an old man's grudge. Did you do it? You know. It?
No. Don't be so touchy, Kazi. Whatever you had to do to occupy your time is fine with me.
And he does clean up well. So does his friend. That tall, dark, handsome one. What's his name?
I looked at her in disbelief.
Just playing with you?
She said and shoved my shoulder.
Sort of.
She leaned against the wall of the shop we were hiding behind and folded her arms, ready to get down to business.
There's no sign of Natia and Eben yet. We've been watching for them in town. Nothing.
It was a worry. It wasn't like Natia to be late, but our plan had cushions in it for the unexpected, like weather or lame horses. We discussed the possibilities, even bandits on the road, but between Eben and Atiya, we were sure bandits would be on the losing end of any encounter. Eben had been trained to become the next assassin of Venda, but after the war, that position was eliminated. The queen disapproved of self-murders, especially since she had narrowly escaped one herself. But his skills were still there. His mastery of a knife was awe-inspiring.
"We know they'll show up," Ren said. "They're just delayed for a good reason. That will give us plenty of time to lie low, like she ordered.
And for you to milk as much as you can out of the Ballingers for the settlement," Sinove added.
I smiled. "Yes, that." Ren's brow lifted with skepticism.
"You really think they'll keep their word?"
Jace loathed the idea. His brothers were furious. But yes, I did believe they would keep their word. That lofty Ballinger pride. It was a business transaction they had agreed to. They'll not only keep their word, they're doing the work themselves. It was all part of our deal. The Ballingers will be digging fence posts. Ren grinned.
"You're evil," she said. "You could steal the nose off a man's face, and he wouldn't know it was gone for a week."
"It's genius, I admit," Sinove said. "Even Atiya would crack a satisfied smile at that one. Any sign of our man yet?"
"Our man. The reason we were here." I heard the tension in her voice. I shook my head and explained that it was a large, sprawling compound with multiple homes and offices that were as big as palaces. And there's the tunnel, too, though I'm not sure it leads to much. To search everything is going to take a while, plus there's a lot of people who work there that I...
"And dogs!" Ren interjected. "They have crazed dogs! Did you know that? Dozens of them!"
Dozens? I had only seen two. Becoming friends with that many might be more of a challenge than I thought. Ren said their efforts to look for me inside the walls of Tor's Watch were thwarted by the nasty beasts.
"A few arrows could have taken them down," Sinove replied.
Ren frowned.
"And a dozen dead dogs just might rouse the guard's suspicions."
Sinove shrugged.
"Could have taken them down, too.
And killing everyone in sight just might go against the queen's orders," I reminded her. Sinove knew that. We were ordered not to kill anyone in order to catch our game, unless our own lives were threatened. There was still some distrust when it came to Venda. We weren't to make it worse for Vendans who were trying to settle in new areas. Get him and get out. That was our task, and that was it. Like plucking a rotten apple from a crate. I told them that we also had the bad timing of being plummeted into the middle of a power war spawned by Carson Ballinger's death. Other factions wanted control of Hell's Mouth and its riches. And these other factions were the ones who sent in the labor hunters. They paid them up front with no other expectation than to scare the citizenry and create a mutiny of sorts in order to gain control. It could be they were the ones who really attacked and burned the Venden settlement, too.
"No," Ren argued. Camus said
the Ballingers took a shorthorn as payment. That is all."
"That's enough. It's still stealing."
"I'm not disagreeing with that, but it was too dark to see who attacked and pillaged the settlement that night. Maybe someone else is trying to stir the wrath of the Venden Queen. Jace denies it was them."
"And you believe him?"
I shrugged. "It's possible." Ren and Sinove exchanged a long, knowing look.
"I know what you're thinking, but..."
"He's duped you, Kaz," Ren moaned. "You, of all people. I can't believe you've fallen for..."
"I haven't fallen for anything, Ren.
I just want you to know there are other risks here besides the Ballingers, and we have to watch out for them. Someone's been setting fires, too. 6 so far. Have you seen anything?
We set one of them,
Ren answered.
Maybe 2.
Sinove added.
You what? I had no choice, she said. It was the middle of the night, and we were still hiding from corner to corner trying to get out of town. I shot a burning arrow into an oil lamp and another into a woodpile. I had to create a distraction so we could get our horses out of the livery. You know that bastard stable master stole our saddles and gear?
Dear gods, if Jace finds out that they set even one of those fires. Did you burn a house? I asked, afraid to hear the answer.
A woods pile, Kazi, and a wagon of hay. Why are you so jumpy?
Because the Ballingers are jumpy and determined to find who is attacking the city. I don't want you mixed up in that battle. I thought about the severed ears. They wouldn't understand, and it could get ugly. No one knows we're here. Yet. Jace memorized details. Their changed clothes and hats wouldn't hide them for long. They needed something more permanent to protect them. They needed Jace's word.
Chapter 25. Jace.
Where is she? My back had only been turned for seconds. She'd been right next to me. Drake and Tiago jumped, embarrassment flooding their faces, their eyes shooting across the plaza, down avenues, wondering how she could have disappeared so fast. She was gone. I didn't think someone could have taken her. She was gone because she wanted to be. I scanned the plaza, looking for Yersin, and spotted him outside the pub. He shrugged. He had lost her too, but there was no sign of Garvin, which was a good omen. We moved to the center of the plaza, watching for him, waiting. And then a whistle pealed out. His signal. Hello, Kazi. She was walking on the boardwalk in front of the apothecary when I intercepted her. Where'd you rush off to? Her steps faltered, then stopped. Me? She answered innocently. I didn't rush anywhere, just taking in the sights. I guess I must have wandered off. Meeting friends? She whirled and saw her cohorts at the end of the walk. Mason held the one with long red braids by the arm. Samuel and Aram stood on either side of the other one. The rest of our crew stood behind them, including Garvin, who had done his job well. There would be no more slipping away. Her fellow soldiers had been here the whole time, and I was certain Kazi knew it. She looked back at me, her eyes narrowing to slits. Her tongue slid slowly over her teeth, and then she walked toward me. Look here, Jace, she said, patting the wall. The place of our first meeting. I bet this is no accident, is it? I looked at the apothecary sign over our heads, surprised. Actually, it is. She stepped closer and her hands slid upward around my neck, her face drawing near, her lips inches from mine. It was an unusual moment for an embrace. I wasn't expecting it, but I wasn't opposed to it either. My arms slid around her waist, and I pulled her closer. Her cheek touched mine.
Think again, she whispered into my ear. This is no accident. I led you here. This is a grand moment I'm offering you, if you do the right thing. Imagine the Malvi Ratan captivated by your charm and leadership while everyone watches. Playing with your hair, laughing, smiling, maybe even kissing you. What a perfect way to erase the shocking image of me slamming you up against this very wall and holding a knife to your throat. Everyone would have a new image to remember and whisper about. It would cement your claim that I, and by proxy the Queen, am on your side.
She smiled, her fingers playing with my hair as she had just described, playfully pulling a strand over my eye.
Release them,
she ordered quietly.
Now,
No doubt everyone who was watching was imagining a very different conversation playing out behind our whispers.
"Keep your word and our agreement," she said, "and acknowledge Ren and Sinove as guests of the Ballingers, free to come and go as they please. In fact, they prefer to stay here in town. I'm sure you can put them up at one of your inns, free of charge, no questions asked, and they keep their weapons."
"And if I don't?"
"The alternative is I slam you up against this wall again and make the image of the Patrey on his knees permanent."
She shrugged.
"I imagine that would only add to your troubles. It might even be written in your history books. The Fall of the Ballingers."
"So this is another one of your blackmailing schemes?"
"A business proposition."
I laughed and tightened my hold on her back, squeezing her against me. "You? Take me down again? Things have changed a little since that last time."
"Think so? You don't even know half of my tricks yet. Do you really want to take that chance? Everyone's watching. I think I even spotted Paxton across the way."
"Why are you doing this?"
"I'm helping you, Jace. I'm giving you a chance to do the right thing. My friends are not your problem. Let them go."
"I don't need an outsider, much less a Venden, to tell me the right thing to do."
"Maybe you do. You promised me you would never harm them. Holding them against their will when they've done nothing is harm. Your word means nothing?"
Neither of us were smiling now. "A large dinner out in the gardens is planned tonight for family and friends. It would be better if your friends came along quietly with us. As our new guests, their absence would be both suspicious and insulting." She rolled her eyes.
"Is there anything that you Ballingers don't find insulting?"
"Plenty. It's just that you Vendens are so accomplished at dishing insults out."
"Fine. They'll come to your little festivity, but they're free to leave when it's over."
Her gaze was steady, unrelenting. Ratan, as guests and in possession of their weapons, which included quivers of arrows, when we still didn't know who had started the fires? Kazi's gaze held as unblinking as a statue, her loyalty to them fierce. I finally looked away, calling to Samuel.
"Show our guests to the Ballinger Inn. Make sure they have the best rooms and everything they need."
Her finger gently pushed on my jaw, turning my attention back to her.
"One last thing, Patrey. No more tales. Call them both off. I am either your honored guest with whom you have an agreement, or I am not."
How did she know? The decoy I understood, but Garvin was damn near invisible. "No more tales," I agreed, and I brought my mouth to hers before she could say one more thing. I was through with conditions. I thought the kiss would be awkward, strained, but she relaxed in my arms, creating the show that she promised. I pressed her against the wall, the image that would burn in everyone's memory and erase the last one. But that was the last of the show, at least for me. I felt her tongue on mine, the warmth of her lips, breathed in the scent of her skin and hair. And we were in the wilderness again, and nothing else mattered. We sat in a dark corner of the tavern sipping a cool ale. Priya fanned herself with a tattered menu, and Mason absently spun a spoon on the table. After seeing Ren and Sinove escorted to the inn, Kazi had gone back to Tor's watch with Jelaine and my mother.
"She made you," I said. Garvin swilled back the last drips of his ale.
"No, she never looked my way," he answered. "But when you stopped her outside the apothecary, she did spot me in the crowd."
"She's seen you before?"
He bit the corner of his lip, still chewing on some memory. "I didn't place her when Mason first pointed her out to me. I was too far away,"
but seeing her up close, I know her, somehow, from somewhere, but I'm not sure where.
He told me that when he used to run wagons, sometimes he went into Venda, mostly for the Komazar, sometimes for merchants in the Jahendra, but the last time he was there was about 7 years ago.
How old is she?
17. He rubbed his bristled cheek, trying to recall where he had seen her.
That would make her just a kid the last time I saw her. What about her name?
Only Kazi, no surname, but she goes by Kazi of Brightmist. I guess that's the...
It's one of the poorest quarters in Sanctum City. Well, truth is, they're all poor, but Brightmist is an especially bad one. Don't let the name fool you. Nothing bright about it. Never sold any goods there. No one in those parts has two coins to rub together. Her name doesn't sound familiar, though.
There must be a few well-to-do families. She said her father's a governor and her mother a general. He shrugged doubtfully.
It's possible, I guess.
I asked why a 10-year-old among thousands would stand out for him. He shook his head.
Don't know, but I'll place her eventually. Faces are what I'm good at, even if she was just a kid at the time.
7 years, 7 inches, and, Priya gestured toward her chest, plenty of new curves tend to transform a girl.
Garvin nodded in agreement. But the eyes, those don't change. Something about hers sticks. The fire in them. That girl has burned people.
He pushed his chair back from the table.
I'll see you tonight. Maybe it will come to me by then.
He tipped his hat and left. Priya circled her finger in the air to the barkeep for another round of ale, then leaned forward with a warning glare at Mason, clapping her hand over the spoon he kept spinning to keep him quiet. She looked back at me.
Up until her little disappearance, she did well today. We were following in your trail, and everyone we talked to mentioned her. Apparently, she pulled a coin out of the ear of the baker's daughter. They were both impressed.
I laughed. Yes, so was I. The girl tripped and was crying over a scraped knee, but Kazi was able to captivate her with a shiny coin she magically found hiding in her ear. The tears were forgotten. I thought about how Kazi didn't hesitate. How she shed her tough exterior and knelt down to eye level with the girl. Kindness was a default for Kazi, even if she wouldn't admit it, especially when it came to children.
Well, Nash and Lydia both think she's better than a holiday trifle. All I heard this morning was Kazi this and Kazi that. When we popped into the tailor today, she juggled brass thimbles for them and gave them a lesson on how to do it too. Get ready for some broken dishes at home.
Her eyes suddenly widened.
And speaking of dishes, you hired a cook? What were you thinking? Aunt Dolise was grumbling around this morning. That's her domain, you know.
The Patre can't hire a cook? We needed another one. She's always grumbling about that, too. There are a lot of people to feed at Tor's Watch, not just the family. I happened to be there just as the guards at the gate were turning a cook away this morning, a vagabond woman looking for work along with her husband. They'll start tomorrow at Riverbend. Aunt Dolise will still have her kitchen, but some extra help too when she needs it. What I didn't tell Priya was that I asked the woman if she knew how to make sage cakes, the vagabond food that Kazi had said could bring her to her knees. When the woman said it was her specialty, I hired her on the spot. Her husband too. She said he was handy with a knife in the kitchen.
Well, you should have run it by Aunt Dolise first. Priya complained. Being Patre doesn't win you any kind of points with her, and there are two kinds of people you don't want on your bad side. Those who guard your back, and those who fill your stomach.
I'll smooth it over with her. Priya shot me a smirk.
Sure you will.
Priya knew Aunt Dolise turned to a pat of butter when any of us boys wandered into the kitchen looking for something to eat.
The dressmaker was impressed with Kazi too, she said. Good job on whatever you did today to keep her in line. It worked.
I frowned. She's not a trained dog, Priya. She doesn't jump at my bidding.
Everyone in this town jumps at your bidding now, Jace. Get used to it. The important thing is, after seeing her walk so compliantly beside you, everyone we passed thinks we've now achieved the upper hand with Venda.
Maybe not everyone, I said. You saw Rybart and Truco? Mason asked. I nodded. And I didn't like that they were walking together.
I saw them talking to Paxton, too, Priya said. When did they all get so cozy?
It was a question that didn't need answering. We knew. They became cozy the day our father died. They might all hate each other in the end, but for now they'd use whomever they could to oust the Ballingers.
I don't like that they're still here, Priya added. Paying respects is one thing. Don't they have businesses to run?
I think that's exactly what they're doing, I answered. Attending to a new kind of business. Getting rid of us. At least we have the Ratan in custody. We don't have to worry about them anymore, Mason said. Technically, we don't have them in custody, I reminded him. They're guests. Remember that? Mason raised a dubious brow. I had him place guards in the timbrous skywalks above the inn. They weren't exactly tails, but they were watching for suspicious activity. As long as Ren and Sanove did nothing suspicious, we had no problems. What did you think of them? I asked. Mason had escorted and questioned them along the way to the inn. Mason snorted. They're a strange pair. Ren, the skinny one, didn't have much to say, but Samuel and Aram were way too preoccupied with their scowls. We need to get those boys out more often. And the other one? Mason shook his head. She never stops talking. But not a word she said amounted to anything important, even when I asked her questions. He leaned forward, a mystified expression on his face. She talked about my shirt. She knew everything about how the fabric was woven and where the buttons were made. And then she played a game guessing my height the whole way there. I think she was trying to make me smile. I didn't like any of it. Like I said, an odd pair of soldiers. But I doubt they had anything to do with the fires. I'm guessing they were just hiding out because Kazi disappeared. And now, of course, they're eager to hang around and see the settlement rebuilt. They mentioned that several times, too. Priya huffed out a disapproving sigh.
Are you really going to do that?
We gave our word, I said, and I've already ordered the supplies.
It will be a compromise, Priya,
and it's going to cost us very little in comparison to what we gain. Laying out a single copper for trespassers wasn't high on my list of things I wanted to do either, until Gunner shot off his big mouth and said the Queen was coming. What choice did I have? At least now there is some measure of truth to our claim, and with the letter Kazi wrote, the Queen may actually come. It's what our father wanted. If it takes rebuilding a few shacks far from our territory, I will swallow the gall in my throat and do it. And so will you and everyone else.
But what right do we have to move them, Jace? The king may have something to say about that.
The king can go yatter to his chickens as far as I'm concerned, I answered. He'll never know they've been moved, and we'll have our land back. It was true, what Kazi said, that we had no defined borders. It was a hard thing to explain to an outsider. It had to do with comfort and what felt intrusive and too close. As far as you can see. We knew we didn't own the land all the way to the horizon.
So what was with that kiss? I'm pretty sure that even Paxton had to have his jaw rehinged after that display. Kazi told me you didn't care a rat's whisker for her.
My fingers tightened on my mug. When did she tell you that?
Last night.
After lying to her about where we were going, threatening to throw her off the horse, and then her suspecting I had harmed her friends, I suppose those were all grounds to believe I didn't care about her. And I had failed miserably at conveying how I really felt. Or maybe I just kept hoping my feelings would go away. Instead, they only grew larger, like a rock in my path that I couldn't maneuver around. That rock was the size of a mountain now, and I couldn't get past it. Priya looked down and shook her head. Oh, damn, Jace. She's got you by the throat. I'm the Patre, remember? I answered, trying to sound more sure than I was. No one has me by anything. She didn't look convinced. The barkeep came and set down the new round of ales Priya ordered. When he left, she reached out and squeezed my hand.
I love you, brother. You know I'm behind you in whatever you do. Just be careful.
Mason cleared his throat and tapped the spoon on the table. Priya reached out and squeezed his hand too, but much more violently than she had mine.
I love you too, brother, she said to him. But if you make any more clatter with that spoon, I'll dig both of your eyes out with it.
Mason deliberately dropped the spoon on the floor to irritate her, and they began wrestling like they were 12 years old again. The ales suffered the brunt of the tussle, all three sliding from the table. Some habits didn't die, and I was glad. Mason finally called surrender when Priya dug her nails into his ear.
All right, I've had all the fun I can stand here, she said, letting go and giving the fallen ales a cursory glance. We should get home anyway. There's a party in the garden tonight with our new special guests. Let's see if these Vendans know how to dance.
I already knew. Kazi was an expert dancer, but not the kind Priya was talking about. Mason rubbed his ear and stood. I'm taking those other two back to the house now. They can cool their heels there until the party starts. I'm not making another trip down here in a few hours. Be careful, Mason. Last time I said I was going to make a rattan cooler heels, it cost me more than I bargained for. Those two? Mason answered. I'm not worried. That's what I had said, too.
Coming?
Priya asked, gathering some packages she had purchased. I'll be along. I have a late meeting at the arena. Priya rolled her eyes.
The ambassador?
I nodded.
Give him hell, Jace. I'm tired of that asshole.
The asshole who was responsible for a good portion of our revenue. I smiled. I'll be sure and give him your regards.
Be careful, she added as she left some coins on the bar to cover our tab. Those Kandorans are crazy.
Give him hell and be careful. Walk the razor's edge. That summed up the role of Patre.
Winter has come. The walls are frozen. The floors are frozen. The beds are frozen. There is no wood, no more oil. So we burn ledgers and books instead. When those are gone, I will have to go back outside to where the scavengers wait. Grayson Ballinger, 14. Chapter 26, Kazi.
Dear gods, Kazi, we've got to call a healer. Ficatande Dragnos!
It wasn't just surprise I heard in Ren's voice. It was fear. No, I'll be fine. Ren and Sinove helped me over to the tub so I wouldn't get more blood on the floor. Just help me rewrap it. Not until it's clean, Sinove argued. She remembered something about that in our training. The truth was, none of us had ever had a major injury, and that was because what we did well. Only others came away injured. The problem was, none of us were sure how to clean it, and I wasn't sure I wanted to. The pain was already making it hard for me to focus. It took all my control to keep my hands from shaking, which made no sense because they weren't injured. I curled my fingers into my palms to keep them still. Ren took a closer look and let loose with another long string of curses against the black, toothy beasts. I had barely made it back to my room when Ren and Sinove had arrived for tonight's dinner party. Mason had delivered them to my door early to await the evening with me, but he hadn't seen me. I called from the bath chamber for them to come in.
A shudder of air escaped my throat as I lifted my foot into the tub. I should have worn my boots, but the slippers were quieter. It mostly got my ankle, but the bites went to the bone. The puncture wounds burned like hot pokers were stabbing my flesh, and there was a 1-inch jagged tear on the inside of my calf. That's where most of the blood was coming from.
What if it punctured an artery?
Sinove wailed.
You could bleed to death.
Keep your voice down, I warned. If it had punctured anything vital, I'd be dead already. It was a long way back here from the tunnel. My greatest worry was if I had left a trail of blood behind, evidence of where I'd been. It had seemed like the perfect timing to do a little poking around. Jace and the others weren't back, and the night dogs hadn't been released yet. I searched Dark Cottage first. It had been a simple enough task because it was so clearly empty. The larder bare, the oven cold, and there were no signs of personal belongings in any of the rooms. Riverbend had been fairly easy to navigate, too. With so much activity in the gardens preparing for tonight's dinner party, the domicile of the Ballinger employees was mostly empty. That left Grey Castle. I was nearly spotted as I crept down a hallway, peeking into rooms, but I heard the floor creak just before Uncle Caswin came around a corner. I slipped into an alcove, and he passed without a suspicion. The captain didn't turn up in any of the rooms there, either. I made Grayson Tunnel my next target. I had slipped effortlessly through it. There weren't many workers in it like the first time I had passed, perhaps because they'd been called to the gardens to help with those preparations, and it seemed every passing wagon and dark shadow was conspiring with me to cover my steps. In minutes, I made it to the intersecting tunnel marked with the faded Ballinger crest. I discovered there were three more tunnels that branched off from it that got progressively smaller. I chose the farthest one and walked to the end, using the same logic of searching for valuables in a chest. The best things were always hidden in the bottom. Except for the eerie echo of dripping water, I hadn't heard a sound. And then I rounded a corner. I had peeked first to make sure no one was there. The small dark tunnel only extended another 20 feet and appeared empty, a wide metal door blocking the end. A dim line of light shone at the bottom. I walked forward to investigate and test the lock. I hadn't seen the black dogs chained in dark alcoves on either side of the door. But they saw me. They were silent devils, knowing exactly what they were doing, waiting for me to step into range, and then they lunged. I kicked them off fast, but not before the damage was done. I was lucky they only got my leg. As soon as I was out of their reach, I ripped off my shirt and wrapped my ankle, carefully wiping the drips of blood from the floor as they snarled and lunged at the end of their chains. If someone had been alerted by the noise, they'd be there in seconds. In those first few frantic moments, I felt no pain, but I knew it was bad. I knew I was in trouble. My fingertips tingled wildly like needles were shooting from them. All I could think in that shocked moment was, I had to get back before someone discovered me. Sinove poured water over my ankle in an effort to clean it. A groan trembled between my clenched teeth.
I'm sorry, Kaz, she cried as she dabbed it. Damn, there's another gash back here that you didn't see.
I didn't need to see that one, too. There were more than a dozen puncture marks dotted around my ankle like a macabre lace stocking.
Wrap it, I said between gritted teeth. Just wrap it. That's enough cleaning.
They both tried to convince me again that a healer was necessary.
And how will I explain how I got these? Tell Jace I was just taking a quick sneak around?
I drew a deep breath and told Ren to go down to the kitchen. Her gaze was fixed on the bloody water trickling down the tub toward the drain.
I don't know the way. Don't worry, you won't get far before someone stops you. Say you have a terrible headache and need something for pain. Ask for Serpent's Claw, Capsaine, anything. I need to be back on my feet before the party. If the captain was indeed holed up at Tor's watch, we were hoping he would be among the guests. There's one other thing, I said, grabbing Ren's arm before she left. The man who tailed me today? He hasn't always worked for the Ballingers. He used to be a Pravizi driver. Ren shook her head. Are you sure? I didn't recognize him. I'm sure, I said, and told them he was the driver who had brought the tiger to the Jahendra all those years ago. I think he recognized me, too.
That's impossible, Sinove said. No one even knew you stole it.
Ren blew out a worried sigh. But she did have a reputation. She was always suspect.
But she has breasts now, hips. She doesn't even look the same.
I kept telling myself that, too. I had changed. I had meat on me now. My cheeks were no longer hollow caves. I was barely the same person at all. But his eyes had been anchored onto mine, and in that moment I had seen something flicker in his memory. If he's here at Tor's watch or at the party tonight, avoid him. And if he says anything, tell him I was a barrow runner for Sanctum Hall. Steer him in that direction. Deny anything else. Ren nodded and left. While she was gone, Sinove carefully wrapped my leg. Just the pressure of the cloth pressing against the wounds made the throb worse.
They need sewing, Kazi,
Sinove said apologetically. I didn't answer. Sewing was out of the question. A 1-inch tear could heal without being sewn up. Her eyes became watery.
I had a dream the night you disappeared. I saw you tumbling in water, and you were drowning, but I never saw this. These damn dreams! They're worthless!
She wiped angrily at her lashes. I reached out and grabbed her hand.
I did tumble in water, Sin. And I did almost drown. Your dreams were right.
Her brow shot up.
Was it him who saved you?
Yes, more than once. He protected me against a bear, and he carried me across blistering sand. Have you had any other dreams? She bit her lip, hesitant.
I dreamed you were chained in a prison cell.
That's not so surprising. I have been before. Sometimes dreams are only dreams, Sinove. You were worried about me.
But in my dream, you were soaked in blood. I wasn't sure if you were alive.
I promise I have no intention of spending time in a prison cell ever again. It was only a dream, I hoped. Ren returned with a tiny vial of crystals. It looked like simple salt. I sniffed skeptically, but there was no scent. She said Mason had intercepted her at the end of the hallway, just as I had predicted. He led her to the kitchen and then searched through a storage room for the crystals. He poured some from a large canister into the vial for her. He called it birch wings and said to mix it with water and drink it to ease pain. Sinove snorted. Mason, I should have gone for the medicine. How much do I take? I asked.
I don't know, Ren answered. Half of it? Maybe just a spoonful?
Her face twisted with worry.
I'm not sure, he said.
At this point, I didn't care. I just wanted the pain to stop. Sinove poured a quarter of it into a cup of water. The glass shivered in my hand as I downed the flavorless potion. They helped me to the bed, and I lay down, my foot elevated on a pillow. Ren smoothed the hair from my face and lay beside me. Sinove crawled onto the end of the bed, her hand rubbing my uninjured foot,
and she began commenting on the accommodations to fill the silence. I smiled as she assessed the heavy blue drapes that surrounded Jace's bed.
Oh, the stories I bet these could tell.
They told me I slept solid for 2 hours. When I sat up, my leg was stiff and oddly heavy like it wasn't my own, but the pain was gone. There was only a mild throb when I swung my foot over the side of the bed and put weight on it. I held up the birch wings vial with supreme admiration. I'll be sure to bring this along tonight in case I need more.
Nope,
Ren said, snatching it from my hand. It's also what knocked you out cold for the last 2 hours. I eyed the deceivingly benign vial in Ren's hand. Powerful crystals like that could be useful.
Unless, of course, Ren added, you want that Ballinger boy carrying you back to your room?
Sinove winked.
Of course she does.
She turned, waving to the side.
Look what came while you were out.
Laid out across the armchair were three dresses.
The yellow one is mine,
Sinove beamed.
I already tried it on. It fits in all the right places, if you know what I mean.
We knew. Sinove had a lot of right places, and she knew it. Everyone always thought she was older than she was.
I have to applaud Madame Ballinger, she added, very perceptive of her in light of the short notice. She barely got a glimpse of me in town.
The violet one's yours. That left the one in the middle for Ren. She stared at it like it had gills and claws.
I am not wearing that thing. I don't even know what color that is.
Pink, I said.
Like a tongue?
Sinove squinted one eye.
A cold, pale tongue.
Wouldn't you like to feel that on your skin?
I shot Sinove a warning glare. Sometimes I had to use my thieving skills even with my friends, and right now something needed to be stolen back. Ren's confidence. Nothing was going quite as planned, and she demanded that everything follow an ordained path. She liked to be prepared and for a strategy to play out as, well, as planned. She would have made a terrible thief because being ready to pivot and change the plan in the flutter of an eyelash was what had kept all my fingers intact. Pivot was practically one of my rules. Our plan had gone awry, and this latest misstep, seeing me on the floor of the bath chamber with blood spattering the tiles, had pricked memories that for her would never be shaken. And nowhere in our carefully wrought plan was Ren supposed to attend a party at Tor's watch in a pink gown. She was supposed to gather supplies, get me whatever I needed, keep her zeith sharp and her eyes sharper, and be ready to move when the signal was sent. Now, as she looked at the dress, I knew she was already wondering where her zeith would go. But tonight a party was ordered, and it was essential that we appear relaxed, as true guests with nothing to worry about, so the Ballingers would relax too, not to mention the guests who might be there. I tested my foot, and when it appeared stable, I crossed the room and touched Ren's dress. I knew how to entice her.
Oh, this is unexpected, I said, gathering it up in my hands.
I lightly passed the hem over my cheek.
What?
She asked.
The fabric? I'm not sure I've ever felt anything so soft. It feels like it's woven from clouds. Feel,
I said, holding it out to her. She shook her head, refusing, her curls bobbing, but she stepped forward anyway and gave it a cursory swipe with her fingers. Ren was sharp, calculating, seeing every move I made, and knowing on some deep level why I made them.
Trust me, Ren.
As tough as she was, she knew her weaknesses too, and the things that brought her comfort. I had never known why she was so drawn to soft things, why she was drawn to that fleece in the marketplace that I stole for her, or the downy duckling she had cupped in her hand.